Welcome to Spiritually Hungry. Today, we're excited to welcome Jenna Zoe as our guest. Jenna is an author, podcaster, and world-leading expert in human design. You guys are going to be so excited. Her goal is to help people understand who they are and how they function so they can express their unique talents and gifts to the fullest. I was really intrigued to learn about human design, and I think you all will be too. So let's get started with Jenna. Welcome to Spiritually Hungry. Today, we are so excited to have our friend and guest, Jenna Zoe. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. I love listening to this podcast.
Well, I'm glad I'm going
to
be on.
Amazing to be on the other side.
I feel like there's so many places we can go. We were just talking before we started filming. We met at least 12 years ago. And it's always exciting to, first of all, keep in touch with people, but also to find each other again and again at different stages of our lives. We're going to go to many different areas, but let me ask you first, can you explain human design and how you discovered it and kind of, well, actually, let me rewind it a little bit. When you came into this world, were you always kind of a seeker or spiritual? Did you consider yourself tapped in or curious about that part of life?
Not at all.
Really?
Not at all. What sign are you?
I'm Aquarius. Double Aquarius.
When's sun your birthday? And
moon. 29th of January.
Okay. Our oldest son is January 27th.
Oh, no
so
way.
We know that
my older sister is January 28th.
Wow. And my dad's 28th. There's a cluster going on around there. So I don't think I felt like I was a seeker until I discovered Kabbalah, really, which is when I was 22. Before that, I was a complete atheist, so into science. But I always felt very kind of existential and had like an existential loneliness to me. And it was like a feeling that I couldn't shake off. And it kind of wasn't helped by the fact that I was a really quiet kid. I didn't find any of the kid things fun.
Really?
Yeah. You know, like the puppets and all this kind of stuff. And I remember people being like, yeah, this is fun. Like, Jenna, smile. And me being like, I don't get that. Like, I don't understand the rules of this thing. And then I was just a very academic, very brainy, nerdy type of child. So I don't think I even had the awareness of I'm looking for something else because I didn't even know there was something else that was on offer until I found Kabbalah.
So how did you find Kabbalah?
So our mutual friend, Jamie, we were on holiday. And he said to me one day, I don't even know why, I need to ask him. He said, you know, there's this thing called Kabbalah. I think you'd really like it. And again, I was like, at the time, I was like, first you're born, then you die type of girl. Like, I believed in everything hardcore and empirical. And I was like, sure, sure, sure. He gave me Ruth, the astrologer's number. And he's like, put this in your phone. And I was like, what does she do? He's like, she's like a palm reader kind of thing. To this day, she's still saved on my phone
as palm reader.
Palm reader.
She doesn't actually read palms.
No. A whole year
she
later.
She is a great astrologer though.
Yeah.
She's amazing. Yeah. A whole year later, I decided to go see her.
Why?
I don't even know why.
Happened? Oh, just
I don't even know why, because I didn't think there was anything wrong or I wasn't going for some kind of crisis management. I think I was just curious and trying to find out what I wanted to do with my life. Went to see her. She read me like an open book. And then there was a part of me that went, oh, this is a science. She is kind of looking at a system that she understands that's speaking to her. It's not just people with, you know, snake oil or just making stuff up. Like, she's obviously tuned into something. And she told me stuff in that reading that, you know, then later came true 5, 6, 7 years later. So, you know, I knew that the more time went on, the more I knew she was, you know, there was something to this. And then literally, I think after that, I went back to see her every single Wednesday for 10 years and then all the courses and I did end up doing a palm and face reading. There was a palm and face reading. That was one of my favorite sessions.
Was it Avi?
No, I think it was David Greenfeld.
Yes.
Yeah. I think it was his course.
He's actually studying that even to learn to the next level now. He's really.
It's profound. So that was genuinely Kabbalah changed the course of my life because before that, it was like a completely different track. And, you know, and I always tell Ruth, like, my life wouldn't be the same if I, you know, it literally saved my life. That was it. I was all in once I found it, though.
And then you started, and then you came to discover.
So after that, I ended up kind of dipping my toe in a lot of other spirituality. And then kind of realizing like there's no, I think what's amazing about Kabbalah is it's so practical. There's a lot of like amazing sounding platitudes in the spiritual world and the self-help, but I felt like it wasn't helping me like move the needle on my life. So I just kept going to Kabbalah, kept cycling through other things, not necessarily feeling like I was getting much from it. And then someone did my human design on me probably 7 years later, 7 years after that, maybe less.
What's the history of-
human design. So that was founded in-
It was discovered, downloaded, channeled, whatever you want to call it, in 1987.
And
By a man called Alan Krakoa, who lived between Sedona and Ibiza. He was in Ibiza when it was downloaded.
I'm chuckling because Jenna lives in Ibiza.
Yeah.
And
is that one of the reasons?
Not logically why, but I'm sure that's part of the reason. He heard a voice in January of 87 and it started speaking to him about
January 29th?
Yeah.
It was a few weeks before that, but close. So he had been a student of the I Ching, of astrology, of the chakra systems, and of Kabbalah for years before that. And there was something that kind of came to him because he was also really into science. Something came to him, said, listen, there's something else to this where you can figure out the sort of circuitry of the energy body, the aura, right? So it's not predictive. It's not necessarily to be used for healing, but there's something about how everyone is built to operate differently and everyone has like a specific operating system. And if you know yours and you kind of work with it rather than against it, it gets you kind of more bang for your energetic buck. If you use it rather than try and do things the way other people say, the 5-step program for 5 things every successful person does in the morning or whatever, you know, these like one size fits all things. So he started talking about it in, you know, from 87 onwards. He passed away in 2010. So before I even discovered human design. But it is basically a system that shows you.
And is there an organization that continues his work or it's sort of, he just left it?
His son does a lot of stuff now in his name, but it was kind of dead in the water. Like no one was talking about it. Mm-hmm. It was kind of left when someone did it on me. It was a shaman who had studied it from one of his students, but it was very, very sort of quiet. That's why I'd never heard about it before and not a lot of people had. But I took to it like a complete duck to water and then I just started doing it on the side. I had a food business at the time.
You did, I remember.
Yeah.
What was the business?
I made like gluten-free, sugar-free, dairy-free cakes. I sold to like Selfridges and different department stores and whatever. And I saw all these girls start the similar businesses, but zoom past me. And I was like, hold on a second. Why are they getting so much flow and I'm not? Meantime, I start doing readings to people on the side and they start telling people by word of mouth. And then I have my side hustle making more money than my main business. That's so I was like, funny. Something's going on here. Anyway, so back to human design. The idea is that it's
so
a system.
So you don't bake anymore, you've abandoned.
Mm-hmm. I don't. The whole premise behind human design is that you have a specific way that you're wired to work. And if you live according to that, so the gifts that you do have, the traits that you do have, the sort of different places where there's energy in your body, if you go back to honoring that and double down on that, then your sort of soul and your surface are kind of energetically matched, so you're advertising yourself correctly, and that's when people resonate with you more deeply. So say, for example...
So your inside and your outside are
matched. Yes.
And how do you discover those parts of yourselves? Is it astrology as well?
Yes. So it's an astrological calculation. It's based on the position of the planets on the day you're born. So the same thing as astrology. But the difference is that it's called the neutrino stream. So there are subatomic particles called neutrinos that all the planets in the solar system are emitting all the time. There's 100 billion of them passing through your small thumb every second. So they pass through matter. The idea is that the day, minute, place, time you're born, you are imprinted with a specific neutrino stream that then activates certain things inside you, depending on where the planets are, like in relation to you. The difference between astrology and human design is that human design also takes the earth position. So where
so like
you are.
So Kabbalistic astrology is according to the lunar calendar and human design.
It's not according to a calendar. It's literally just the position, frequency. The angles of the different planets, because they would activate, depending on what angle they are at in the sky, would activate a different kind of gate or flavor or gift that you might have or not have. So imagine like a 360 degree sort of like genetic programming wheel that we're on. Certain things would be like lit up at the time you're born. And those would be things that you'd be chosen to be good at in this life. And then things that you chose not to have. And so if you spend your life trying to be things that you're not, it's always going to be a harder climb. And this is just a system that ultimately says, oh, this is what you are, and this is a reminder. And usually when people hear it, they're like, oh, I kind of knew this all along. But sometimes we need that outside to just, you know, someone that doesn't know us, someone that isn't us with our own stories, just having a very objective, you know, way of mirroring that back to you. So then you can really own it and double down on it.
So what if somebody wants to be, can you rise above that? Like it was in Kabbalah, we teach a lot about, you know, we all have our nature, and then you want to transform aspects of yourself and change your nature. So if, let's say, I can understand if, let's say somebody is a school teacher, but mm-hmm. they really desire to be a singer, let's say, right? Mm-hmm. So I could see how this would now point out that you're not really following your calling. But what if they want to be something more than what they mm-hmm. see through their reading?
So what it does is it maps out certain, so there are 64 different energies that are available in the human experience, what they say. And every single one of them has six different iterations,
okay,
or levels, let's say. And it's based on the Chinese I Ching. And basically, the energies that are available there can be taken to extraordinary genius levels, or we can iterate them in negative ways, right? So if we plug lack into, you know, being a great nurturer, then that obviously iterates itself in a very negative way. What human design says is that no one yet has been able to plug the highest consciousness into that quality, that gift of being able to really nurture. We haven't seen the Elon Musk version of what that is, right? So it's not necessarily that you can change the things that come easy to you, but it's more about there are always going to be new levels to the genius that so far as humans, because we are so homogenized, what we think is genius is not even yet what we are able to tap into potentially. So what we're looking at now, or what humans are able to do, is actually not even a good reference point compared to where we could go if we individuated enough. And the other thing, what you're saying about being a school teacher or a singer, is it doesn't really matter so much the job that you funnel the gifts into, because you could be a politician that really leads with being great at strategy and planning, and that would be good for you if you're already good at those things. Or you could show how much you care about people, and that would equally make a different but good politician. Mm-hmm. But just something that we want from you, because everyone's reading each other's energy, we feel that that's you being you, and so we kind of magnetize ourselves towards you, and we trust you, and we are drawn to that, right? So it's more about like knowing what you have and then really running with it and seeing how much it can come out of you in ways that you haven't necessarily even seen before.
Mm-hmm. So can you use yourself as an example, what mm-hmm. you learned about yourself and how it changed maybe where you put your energy or how you direct yeah. your life?
So there's lots of different subcategories within your design. So for example, you know how you have like your sun, your moon, your rising. In human design, your sort of big three are your energy type, which is how your aura gives and exchanges energy with the rest of the world.
Then you might go through this, how many?
So there are five energy types. Curious to know which one you guys are. So you have five. You have manifestors, generators.
Do you mind just explaining each one? So manifestors.
Yeah, so I'll just say the five. Yeah, sure. So you have manifestors, generators, manifesting generators, projectors, and reflectors. Okay, so manifestors are people who traditionally all the kings and queens in history have all been manifestors. Everyone who's ever invaded
even
the country.
Even the not good ones. Even the mm-hmm. not good ones.
She's even the not good ones.
Yeah, they're on the lower frequency.
Yeah. Okay,
aren't you okay. paying attention?
So all the kings and queens, everyone who's ever invaded a country, everyone who's created a movement has been a manifestor in history. And manifestors now are only 8-9% of the population. Mm. And they are like the J.K. Rowlings, the Gloria Steinems, the J.R.R. Tolkiens of the world, where they literally create a world within this world that draws other people into that downstream, that other people can then just like, they create these openings that creates other energy for other people. And that's why they're called manifestors, because they have this very concentrated energy that's either at 200% or it's at 20%. So even
Adele.
Could
it be negative?
Absolutely. Yeah. You've had a lot of autocratic manifestors before because they have such a big aura. Their aura is very big and it's very selective. So when they're doing their sort of, you know, dharma the right way, they are out there, right, doing what they want to do and just allowing whoever wants to get on the train to get on the train. If you have a big aura and you misuse that, you're then manipulating people to come and join you. You're leading with fear. You're leading with mm-hmm. control. So that's obviously the way that, you know, they are the people who can conquer countries if they try. Right. But the thing about their energy is they're either at 200% or they're at 20%. So they work in bursts. So think about Adele, right? She's a manifester. She had an album called 18. She had an album called 21. And she had an album called 25. And she said, you don't see me in the middle. There's a reason why I don't have an album for all the other ages in between, because she's out there, she's touring, and then you don't see her. She's not in the public eye. She's dead to the world, you know, and she, that's her words, not mine. So these are people who really are supposed to just like create a movement, pop out into the world, do something, and then everyone else has something to respond to and get involved in. So manifestor traditionally, they...
But how would a king do that, right? So you mean they're doing something big every once in a while?
Yes.
I mean, they're conquering a country.
They're moving energy in big ways.
Exactly. Moving energy in a big way. So now you have a different type that's usually the leaders of the world. So we can get, and I'll tell you when we get to that type. So manifestors are very rare, but they're also very, very powerful when you do see them, when you do interact with them. And they create movement in your own body too. They're those people that kind of rouse you. And even if they're trying to hide, which is their sort of what we call the not self, which is when you're not living your design, you don't want to be noticed as a manifestor. You stay really small. You look for everyone else's opinion before you make one step. So they try to overly people please or overly get validation it's going to work out before they even make one move because they're so afraid to ruffle feathers, right? Because it's been done in a way that has ruffled people's feathers. But actually, when they do it in a way that's really from joy and from love, then it's not going to ruffle any feathers. It's not repellent. It's not, you know, rousing in the negative ways. And you think about what Gloria Steinem has done and how amazing that's been, you know, that's that energy. So that's manifestors. Then you have generators. And generators are... like the Elon Musks, the Jeff Bezos, the Oprahs, the Beyoncés of the world. They have one thing they're really good at and they compound just daily. When they love doing it, they just do it day in and day out. It gives them energy. They're ruled by their gut. So they only know, okay, if I do what I love, it's going to give me energy. When I do something I actually don't like doing, it drains them of energy. Mm-hmm. And that's the universe's way of saying that what I'm making you be lit up by is not by accident. It's because you're supposed to stay this very narrow path and not get distracted of becoming really mastery level at something, right? So think about Elon Musk is amazing at engineering. That is his, even though it's iterated.
And one thing I find really interesting about Elon Musk is that in one of his interviews, he says, it's not so much that he wants to do what he does. He feels like he has to be doing what he does, which is, I thought, very interesting. Mm-hmm. Because most of us, I think we think, you know, how am I going to do what I want to do?
Yeah.
But mm-hmm. rather than I have to be doing this.
Yes. Sort
of you must do it.
Yeah.
Yes. And so generators are really the people who they have the same level of energy every single day and they can go and go until they get tired if they're doing something that they really love. But because our world is ruled by generators and our world is also ruled by you should do this. Well done for going to see grandma when you didn't want to. And, you know, good for doing something that was self-sacrificial, even though you weren't excited by it. It's all of us trying to decide what the best outcomes are rather than letting those people actually decide the win-win situation for everyone when they do something that they're actually excited to do. A lot of generators are then like, oh, well, I just always be selfish. It's like, no, you will enjoy doing things for other people sometimes, just not all the time. So generators are that type where they have this like really juicy magnetism to them when they're doing something that they love and they create so much energy inside of their sacral that it kind of spills over into them and it makes them really magnetic. So you don't have to like what Oprah's saying or doing to just like find her interesting to watch what she's doing. And, you know, it's very sort of warm and it's an enveloping aura. So it's a very much like bringing people together, being the life and soul of the party or being the one that lifts the energy in the room. Because when generators do what they love doing, they actually have so much energy that it spills out of them and energizes other people mm-hmm. and powers up other people. So they're people that you want to be around when they're doing what they love, which is why ultimately doing what they love is not selfish.
That exactly, thing that really lights them up. Because it is. And also everybody else is feeling that.
Yeah. It's really powerful. So with them, their real sort of main thing is to not get distracted off the thing that, like you're saying, the thing they feel they can't not do. Like, for whatever the world's reasons are to maybe do this and you should be doing more of this and whatever. It's like, no, it's compound interest for these people. Like it will just add up. And then you have manifesting generators and they're a hybrid of manifestors and generators. So they have that gut power, the consistent ability to show up that generators have, but they have a little bit more of that spontaneity of manifestors. So manifesting generators are like the Tony Robbins, the Angelina Jolie's, the, you know, Jessica Alba, who has her like baby line and is also acting and producing. They are the multi-hyphenates who end up doing a lot of different things or combining a lot of different life paths together. And what happens with them is that they achieve mastery very quickly at things. And so they can just pick up the harp, know how it works in 2 seconds, and then they don't need to still do the harp for another 10 years. They're like, okay, I got what I needed out of that. And now I'm going to like add this like one thing I learned from playing the harp into like doing, you know, gardening or I don't know what, right? So they're the real like, you know, multi-hyphenates of the world. And really their thing is they have a lot of fear of being flaky or changing their minds or not finishing what they started, because that's seen as like a weakness. But actually they're here to really learn to iterate it in a correct way, which is like, no, everything is here to serve me. It's not about the job. It's not about the thing. It's about how, what I pick up along the way. And then wherever you end something, you're going to start at that level anyway in the next, you know, venture. So with them, they have this like a very sort of wide and broad focus, and they can pull in a lot of things at the same time. Now, there's a lot of people, especially kids, that are getting diagnosed with ADD.
Oh, this is interesting. Mm-hmm.
And it's actually a lot of the times I do a lot of readings for parents who their kids, I'm like, listen, you just need to run their energy out. You need to send them to judo, and then you need to send them to this and then this, and it will go away. And it does, because
well,
these
also
are not
the food you put in them too. Mm-hmm. I think that their whole system is so sensitive.
Yeah.
All of their being, their psyche, their everything, that they just need like to have pure energy put inside of them and then release that energy through many, many things.
Yeah.
But yeah, I know a lot of people, a lot of parents who don't see it that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's a painful.
So what you're saying, is that manifesting generators would often manifest as kids be seen as ADD.
A lot of time they get diagnosed as being ADD because they're not supposed to sit down and focus on, right, you know,
one thing,
something for a long period of time. And they're meant to kind of, you know, learn how to actually spread their energy and hold lots of different things at the same time. So this is where it's really powerful, is like honoring how your kids come in and allowing them to, you know, live their way rather than, you know, being the perfect parent or the perfect kid is like, you know.
It's, I mean, that's something we speak about a lot, is that, you know, unfortunately, you see a lot of parents who have an idea of what their kids should be, which is crazy, right?
Yeah.
Because kids clearly have their own path, have their own soul. Mm. And so with our kids, we never, ever wanted our kids to be any one thing. We wanted them to be the best version of whatever they are. But you do see a lot of parents who are like, you know, the ego is so, my kid has to go to this university.
Yeah.
My kid has to be.
Yeah, but I think that, for instance, in this specific example with children who have ADD or ADHD, a lot of parents respond, and not just with this, but they respond with fear, right? So they see something in their child that they don't understand. They don't know how the child's going to turn out. So they get very, very fear-based, because I know even some of the kids, they literally cannot retain information that there's, because they cannot sit still. So then how do you teach the child? So you start to think, oh my God, if we don't get it, right? So I can understand why that's extra challenging, but I do agree in the sense that the approach needs to be holistic. You know, you have to see the whole being of a child to help them navigate, but it is difficult. Yeah.
And it's a premise of, it's just this idea of like, what if all the things that we think are oh so wrong about us actually are there for a reason, and we need to find the way that they're, you know, what's the purpose? It actually could be oh so right that you can't focus, because that means you can hold lots of different things, you know? So you don't want to shut that down.
Totally. I don't know if you know my youngest child, Abigail, we co-wrote The Gift of Being Different. And it's exactly that idea. And what we did is to find the thing that you're most insecure about, or the thing that you think is your limitation, and see it as your superpower.
Mm.
And it was such a beautiful experience we had together. But then we traveled all over the world to different schools, and we read our book, and then we would go around the room and we'd say, what's your superpower? And at first the children were like, well, mine's basketball and I'm a fast runner. And then one was like, after they started to put it together, and Abigail's is dyslexia, then one child's like, well, mine's ADHD and I just have so much energy to do so many things. And then another one was like, and they started to take things that were not seen as accepted in social norms. Exactly. And saying like, and I, you know, I am powerful because of this. And Abigail's like, yeah, I can see things nobody else can see because my brain works differently. Like, it's just a really, and I think that that's probably part of what you're saying is that that's the world we want to live in, right? Where we not only accept, for sure, not only tolerate, but we look to see our differences as ways that we are all really fundamentally connected, because we are meant to be different.
Yeah.
You're meant to be, come in all shapes, sizes, different ways, and explore that. So
absolutely. And where it becomes really powerful then is that there is a self-responsibility, because it's like, okay, all this is in you. Now here's something saying it could be right, but now it's on you to go and make sure that you express it correctly and get it out of you. And, you know, that's also where, you know, there's not one day that I don't think about the Kabbalistic principles, because it's all about sharing and all about getting out of you. Like, you can be the most gifted, talented person, but if you're sitting, you know, on your couch waiting for a manifestation, like, that's also, you know, not going to happen. But this is just like
children, by the way, or most?
I do. I love doing readings for kids. Yeah. It's like my favorite thing. So the founder of Human Design used to say, he was very cutthroat, and he used to say, this is all fine for you guys if you want to enjoy it, but it's really for us, for the kids, because they won't have so much undoing to do if they already get raised that's this way, you know? So that's what's really powerful. And people just, the unlocks that happen with people in parenting is like the most magical thing to see.
So you do readings for people?
I do sometimes. Now it's more on the app. So I have an app now. So the app will give you a reading from me, like a custom reading on all your different parts. And there's tips every day on
What's the app called?
My Human Design.
My Human Design.
Yeah.
There's somebody I have in mind. Her son has ADHD and she's kind of struggling. So I wanted to gift that for her.
Absolutely.
But yeah, we'll talk about that after.
There's a lot of other things that can get mistaken as that. So there's another component in Human Design called it's like how your emotions function. And there's a lot of people that have very big waves. So they can feel really, really high, like strong highs and very, very low lows. And so their spectrum that they cycle in is much bigger than other human beings is. And sometimes that gets misdiagnosed as well as, you know, you're emotionally imbalanced, or maybe you have ADD, or maybe even other
depression, bipolar disorder, etc.
Yeah, all of that.
Okay, so that's three of the five.
So that's three of the five. So then you have projectors. Projectors have only been around since 1781, so 200 years, the newest type.
Really?
Uh-huh. And projectors, you know how you have the generators, they're going and going every day. The manifesting generators are here, there, and everywhere. And then the manifestors are like starting movements. The projectors, instead of trying to be like the lions and the tigers and the, you know, on the ground, they're like the birds up on the tree. So instead of using their energy and trying to keep up with everyone else's engine, right? Because you're just a bird, you don't have the same engine. You have a specific vantage point that as human beings, let's say 200 years ago, we kind of mastered the rules of the material plane enough to then be afforded to think about what we want to achieve with our own lives, love, direction, feelings, intimacy. Like those were things that we could afford to spend more time on because we kind of understood like survival, and we kind of mastered, you know, finding food and creating systems and all these kind of things. So 1781, we had this new type come in, which is like, okay, it's not about me getting myself from A to B. It's about how can I see something, because I'm not mired with my own engine all the time, right? Which would blind sometimes some of the seeing. How can I help other people get from A to B? Because most projectors are obsessed with some kind of efficiency, some kind of tweak, some kind of improvement, some kind of guidance. And so
projected outward towards humanity, towards other people?
Other people, or towards like a system. So you could be like in the legal system and you could see all the things that are wrong with it or something like that. And
or like a humanitarian or like...
Yeah, exactly.
So what would you say Margaret Mead would probably be?
Maybe. I don't know. I'd have to look it up.
Yeah. That's probably what I would do with this. I feel like putting everybody and find out like what the...
You could just do them on the app and it will tell you what everyone is. So the thing about projectors is their sort of biggest wound is validating themselves on keeping up with everybody else and having that same consistent get up every day, do the same thing, when they actually are not supposed to, because most of their work is not about doing. It's about observing, coming to conclusions. The active part is the mental part. And then the sharing of it, or the sort of outputting it, is only 2 to 3 hours a day. But if they try to be outputting 8 to 10 hours a day, then that blocks the amount that you're able to like watch and see potential and spot things and you know, guide people. So the biggest block that stands in their way is trying to run at a certain pace that we think we all have to run on to be successful.
Exactly. I was going to say that, like, this is only working 2 hours a day. Mm-hmm. How are you ever going to make anything of yourself?
Exactly.
You know, all of those different voices and narratives that we hear.
Yeah.
Or comparing ourselves to other people who are working 16-hour days, you know, like running like crazy. But different frequency.
And they're always, always working. It's just it looks like a different kind of work. They're often studying, learning, improving their knowledge, you know, that kind of thing. And Winston Churchill is one of my favorite examples of
a projector. Really?
Because even in World War II, he still took a nap every single day.
That's very funny.
It's funny. He owned
it. My our oldest daughter, Miriam, is a big fan of Winston Churchill. She actually did a drawing of him.
A very good drawing.
Yeah, a very good drawing of him. And there's a famous photo of him with the cigar. And Miriam actually,
we were talking about him 2 days ago.
Yeah, we were talking about
him
a lot.
Well, what sign do you think he is? I mean, it's this kind of conversation. I guessed it right, by the way.
Yeah.
What was he?
Sag.
Wow. That's a great,
And the thing about him is that, again, he did many, many different things.
Mm-hmm.
And It's an interesting book. I don't know if you, it's the friendship between Churchill and Roosevelt by John Meacham. Very, very interesting. And he really juxtaposes the different personalities and also childhoods. Apparently, Roosevelt came from sort of a very wealthy, well-to-do family and sort of, and Churchill had this sort of, the way, again, in the book, the way he wrote is that his dad didn't think highly of him. And he had to sort of, even throughout the rest of his life, he had to sort of fight for that. It's very interesting to see that juxtaposition. But yeah, we're big fans of Churchill.
I love that. He's one of the best example. He was a projector. Obama was a projector. The Queen was a projector. Yeah. So they're saying the new kind of, it's not to say these are better people, but the new kind of leadership is like that CEO who has an open door and everyone in the company just come ask me questions. Come, like, let me troubleshoot stuff with you whenever you need, and then just, you know, come in and out, not top down, I'm telling you what to do anymore, but just like, I can share my viewpoint with you. And projectors, the reason why they're called projectors is because they have a very, one-on-one aura, right? So if you imagine a light projector, it's shining light on you, it's seeing everything. Now, their biggest also downfall is that when you shine a light on someone, you're also seeing all the dark behind, which they're not seeing. And so projectors can often have a very bitter take on life, because all you're doing is seeing the things that are wrong with things, right? And if you don't understand that you should get excited about that, because you get to improve it and those are opportunities for you to, you know, come in and share, then you can get very sort of like down about how much more there is to be done or how, you know, whatever. So those are growing in numbers now, projectors. And so where you have manifestors who are starting the energy and getting everything kind of, you know, roused, and then you have generators seeing things that they could possibly do and then getting involved in the stuff that they love, and then manifesting generators coming in and kind of combining different things, and then you have projectors coming in and saying, let's improve this. So when you go down that cycle, then the last piece of the energy is reflectors, and that's only 1% of the population. Reflectors, and you guys know one, because Jordan, who you were with yesterday, is a reflector.
That's right. Right, she mentioned it.
Right. We didn't know what it meant. Yes. Fully at the time.
So reflectors, they have a totally open aura. So they're real chameleons. And the thing about a real chameleon, you know how that saying of like, you can see yourself in other people? In a reflector, you really can see everything because they don't have any of their own, what we call definition in human design.
Actually, so, I have the chills because that's exactly how I would probably describe her and her energy, which is a beautiful one.
Yeah. And so they really, really change so much based on their environment because they're so conditioned by the outside energies that are imprinting on them wherever they are. And the whole sort of like,
oh, so purpose, you're saying the energy I felt yesterday was my own.
Yeah. That's what, you know what, being around a reflector and liking them is a good sign though.
That was,
yeah.
I enjoyed myself. Oh, you're right.
If they're living their design. So their biggest thing, because they are so malleable and so changeable, their biggest conditioning is like, you have to know who you are, because actually for them, it's so much more kind of stretchable. And so when they feel this insecurity of not knowing who they are and they feel like they need to have this persona, then you can't see anything in them, right? So then reflectors become deflectors, right? And then you don't see anything in that person. Mm-hmm. But reflectors, what they say is they belong in the center of society, so that as we're all cycling around this thing of us creating movement and sharing movement, you can check in on the reflector and see where we're at in society based on how we see that reflector. If the reflector is doing well and they're healthy, we're doing well. If the reflector is not doing well, we're also not doing well. So they're sort of like, they're wise, not because of what they say, but because of what they can so viscerally mirror back to us. So it's sort of this chain of, if we're all using our energy the correct way, then we form well together as a society, but everyone is playing their right roles, you know? Their aura just can change so much.
And does that shift or change as a person changes? Will their reading be different? So if you do your own reading every year, for instance, and you're living more of, I'll use it in my own language, but more of your truth, would you get more of a different energy, or you always stay what you are? Like, how does that, the reading change?
So your energy type is always your energy type. Your authority, which is how you make decisions, always the same. Your profile, which is your archetypal kind of, you know, costume, is all that stuff that never changes. But you just go on deeper journeys of, it's the same things over and over again, but you just understand them in different ways. There would be different phases at which, for example, different gifts would sort of like come online. So sometimes, for example, you have to be, I don't know, living your, there's another aspect of your design called your digestion, in order to, and your digestion is basically about awakening your brain power enough, not so much about, you know, the rest. But if you are digesting life in the correct way, then you're able to notice more things. So then you can notice that you're better at, you know, whatever your genius things are, but you have to awaken those things first. So there's things you can kind of like understand that you have, but you don't really live them until later on. So they would come online at different phases of your life. But the cogs, like the stuff that's there in your toolbox doesn't ever change now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what are you?
So I'm a projector. I'd be so interested to know what you guys are.
You have to do it on the app, right? That's how you
do it on the app. Okay. You put in your birth time. It tells you everything.
Let's do it.
Which you should. I'll give you guys a login for it. And then you have your authority, which is this idea
So as a projector, how did you think of yourself before? How did...
Yes.
Speaking.
I love that. Yeah. So I was literally, because of that conditioning of, I have to like prove how much of a hard worker I am, and where we get addicted is in like workaholism. And we ride off other people's life force. So you know how I was saying to you, like, I was exhausted after this weekend, but I'm riding high off everyone else's life force. So I'm like so overstimulated, dancing for 4 hours on Saturday night, and then realizing, hold on a second, I was like taking everyone else's energy, you know, because I don't have my, you know, there's not that sacral life force that's making all this energy, but I'm like amplifying everybody else's. Because where you're open, where you don't have something, you amplify from the external world. So I'll give you an example. People who are non-emotional, which means that they themselves are cool, calm, and collected, they're actually the people who sometimes can seem the most emotional because they are able to pick up on other people's emotions, right? So sometimes if you're so open, where you're open is also where you're empathic, right? Or where if you're mentally open, then you're psychic. If you're emotionally open, you know, it's different. If you're open in the gut, you're open to other like addictions, like work and productivity and all those sorts of things. So what you choose to not have is also where you can take in, amplify, observe, feel other people, because you don't have a buffer, but it's also where you can think, oh, I'm lacking something. I need to become more like this. So as a projector, because I am lacking in that constant productivity, when I had a food business, I was getting up at 6 a.m., lifting weights, running around, doing all my own deliveries, trying to prove how much of a hard worker I was, to the point where I was like, oh, I'm not even making money, but I'm validating myself on how much I'm keeping
That's
up.
That's when I met you, I think.
Yeah.
That's so interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So you just said something about, if you're mentally open, then psychic abilities. If you're emotionally open, then more empathetic. What if you are open in all of those areas?
If you're open in every single one of your 9 areas, then you are a reflector. So the only person is totally open. Mm-hmm. And that's where you can take in other people's drive, other people's desires, other people's inspiration, other people's fears, other people's instincts, other people's voice, other people's perspectives. Yeah. So where we have our own is where we're sort of protected from, you know, taking that in. And those are the things that we are supposed to get out, right? So there are certain people who are supposed to have, especially in today's world, I think about it all the time. There's certain people who need to have their unique perspective, need to have their specific opinion, right? But instead, everyone has sort of equated having an opinion with being smart. So there's all these people who are not supposed to be sharing their opinions. And they're the ones who really feel insecure for not having an opinion. So they're shouting the loudest because that's where they're getting validation from, is where they feel like they don't have something, right? So they're like extra trying to create something, right? And the people who are supposed to have opinions are the ones we're supposed to learn from, but we almost can't hear them because they're drowned out by the noise of people who are, you know, doing it from a place of what we call the not self. So it's really interesting to know what you don't have, because that's equally as important to let go of needing to be that.
So correct me if I'm wrong, use terminologies like real self rather than the constructed self.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say that's the same as soul versus ego?
Yeah.
Body?
Yeah, exactly the same. Just different words, where one is conditioning and the other one is the way that the idea is that when you're born, you kind of, if you were left to your own devices, you would already be living according to your natural inclinations. But then we come into a world where, you know, you feel your parents are doing one thing, and so you feel like you have to be more like them to get love or to get belonging, or just from a very primal place, like, okay, this is how I still secure my food supply as a 2-year-old or whatever, you know. Or some people have really artistic parents and they're super strategically minded, and then they learn to unbecome the strategic nature and stuff. So it's just about coming back to who you already were before the world told you how to be.
So another similarity I see between Kabbalah and human design, we talk about tikkun, which you know, and then there's also karma, right? There's cause, there's effect, there's free will. How does this fit into human design?
I actually can't wait for you guys to see a chart, because you'll see it looks so much like the 10 sphere art.
Really?
And that's one of the things that he really pulled from Kabbalah. That's interesting. Yeah.
Do you know like what he studied? Do you know more of
his service? You know, his whole thing is shrouded in, and it was also before like real proper internet days. Right. And he used to just give random off the cuff talks to people in Ibiza and whoever would come. But I do know that.
Did he have a big following when he was alive?
Small.
Small.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. It's often like that.
Yeah. But I do know that he, one of the sort of, I guess, downloads that he got was that, and there's only 9 centers, right? So it's not 10, but it's not 7 chakras. We're more developed now. And so more of us has come online because of, I was saying, like, we can focus on direction. We can focus more on emotions. We can focus more on love. You know, we have these things. So I'm so interested to see, because you guys will see how similar it looks. But one of his sort of like main things was the idea is that you want to get to a place where you are so, and I think you said something about this over the weekend, where you're so detached from like having to figure out the cause and effect yourself that you let the sort of like divine move through you. And that's what happens when you listen to the way you're supposed to make decisions, which is your authority in human design, that what we awaken is something called passenger consciousness, where you are literally watching your life. It's almost like you're not being moving from the mind, but you literally just feel like you're also able to sit back and watch your life and almost lean a bit more into the idea that there's a destiny rather than a free will. You're just not intervening so much.
I call that surrender. Most people misunderstand that word, but I see it as a true surrendering where exactly you lean in and you allow, you're so at one with the energy, the force of the universe that you're not against it. And then it just becomes super clear what your part is in all of it.
Yeah. And so his thing was really like, listen, if you are meant to live life this way and you're being called to do this, but you have the mind saying this doesn't make sense because of this, or that's a cool thing to do, and you're trying to figure out what's best for everyone else around you, then you're not, you know, then you are interfering with karma, right? If you're staying in your lane, then you're keeping kind of like energetic hygiene. And by default, then everyone else's alignment is going to come in, but you can't get swimming in their lanes. And we do that when we're trying to manage cause and effect. We're trying to micromanage cause and effect rather than be like, oh, I don't need to know why I'm being called to do this thing, but it doesn't need to make rhyme or reason for I used to love doing it this way, or I normally do this, like whatever the things are. When we get out of the mind and into the body, that's when, you know, we are living that passenger consciousness, for want of a better word.
And that's
word.
Considered a higher level of consciousness.
Yeah.
And can you gauge your development, your growth with this system?
Yes. What happens when you start to live it is that you notice every time you don't do it, the I don't want to call it the punishment, but like
the effect, yes.
Just gets so much bigger. And the things that you, I guess like the sort of, the amount of it throwing you off becomes so much more,
intense.
I guess, painful, intense, noticeable. Things that you used to like, okay, for example, me with this summer, something I was going on a journey with, you know, saying, living in Ibiza, I always think, oh, it's fun. I should say yes to so many things and go to so many parties and whatever. And really experimenting with tuning into that story of when my mind was telling me versus what I actually was being led to do. And just the amount of money I wasted on things and things that didn't end up working out or last minute didn't fall through and all this stuff. And I'm like, look at how much it's just being ruffled up by the story, right? And I'm really feeling it. And it's getting to the point where it's like annoying me now. Cause I'm like, okay, I've wasted so much time, so many other people's energy, da 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 da. So then I'm like, okay, this is an obvious wake up call. Do you know what I mean? So you start to see even the more subtle things that you're like, I can't afford to keep doing this anymore. Like enough of this now, like stop, you know? And then I'll tell you the craziest thing. Cause I was on this whole journey with like having fun.
Which is a good thing.
We're big
fans of fun.
Well, I'll tell you the craziest thing is that I was saying to someone who works with me, you know, I think I just have a very different definition of what fun is, because I don't like going to places where I feel like there's a little bit of a dark energy around or whatever. And I was like, do you know what? If I feel like this is going to end up, and obviously your brain goes to the other extreme, which means I'm going to live alone in a cave and never have any friends, right? And what happened this week? What clicked into place? I went to an amazing dinner on Wednesday, went to an amazing dinner on Friday, had a whole blast at Purim on the weekend. I'm like, oh, see, it's never as bad as you think it is. It's always available there, but you have to let go of you have to say, I don't like going to things where people are, you know, there's
I
not
don't
such
want
good.
This. So you can recognize what you do want, and then that comes to you.
And it just magically appears. So
that's pretty funny.
Yeah, it's really fun.
So how do you deal with disappointment or heartbreak? How does this system help you? if it does?
So every type has a signature default negative emotion that they experience when they are, which is life's way of saying you're not living your way. This means that it's you that's creating this. So for example,
that specific emotion.
So manifestors have anger. Generators and manifesting generators have frustration. Projectors have bitterness. Reflectors have disappointment. And so
sadness.
So sadness comes from, okay, so there's two things. So those default negative emotions are the ways that you can tell if you feel them. So bitterness for me as a projector with shoppers, oh, they don't know what they're doing, or they just don't see how great it is, or they're getting this wrong, or da-da-da. All of that has all that flavor of bitterness in there, right? So when I catch myself feeling that emotion, I know it's me. Second, when I feel that there is happiness or sadness, which is, okay, so there's feelings and then there's emotions. So think about the emotions in human design is we talk about it like wearing pink sunglasses or wearing the blues, right? So anywhere in between that is a cycle that all human beings are on, which is like, okay, if I've just won the lottery or if I've just lost somebody, right? So happy and sad. And that's a spectrum that everybody runs on. People who are emotionally balanced, they run like this, except when stuff happens to them and then they start amplifying that energy. So knowing how to separate where you are on that spectrum and understanding that if you are a very emotional person, that's actually unrelated to what's going on in your life. So some people just wake up in very happy or low moods, irrespective of, you know, their life situation. And they have to actually think, okay, well, I'm not going to look for something to blame it on or a cause to project it onto, or why do I feel this way? There are just some people who are transmitters of emotion and some people who are receivers of emotion. So that's number one. Number two is your not self. So that's the thing that shows up when you, it's a feeling that you get that shows up when you aren't being your real self. So it helps to know that it's like, you know how Eskimo have 20,000 words for snow? Like, okay, when we say emotions or feelings, like what bucket does this fall in? And then things like, you know, a sad situation in your life or whatever it is, like that's where it really comes into, you know, understanding that these things are not necessarily bad things, but you have to have the that passenger consciousness where you can sit and just let it cycle through you and almost watch yourself and be like, you know what? I think there's a part of my soul that's really signed up for this. Like, I think if I'm up there, I'm like, yeah, I want to feel like what heartbreak feels like. You know what I mean? But you can only get there when you're that detached from getting out of the mind, which is the narrative. This is bad. This is good. This must mean I feel this, or I'm doing something wrong. Or we were talking about breakups before, right? The whole suffering comes from, did I do this wrong? Could I have done it more? Could I have whatever? Rather than,
I don't deserve this.
Yeah. Rather than like, oh my gosh, my heart is like breaking. Like, oh, wow. You know, because that's something I think we want to experience, you know?
Are you in life, are you able to get to that place?
Sometimes. Okay. Not always. Definitely now more. And I'm like, oh, okay, I really understand what this is now. And it's almost like borderline psychotic because you're like, I shouldn't be this in wonder of like certain things that are actually kind of unpleasant or negative. But, you know, they're all interesting, right? But it's always, I can always tell, I don't know about you guys, but I can always tell when it's the mind that's coming in and like, you know, hooking in to tell the story of like, oh no, and this means this and that means that and this must be bad and da da da.
That's so the narrative. Idea is, yeah. You know, I always say emotions are indicators and we should pay attention to them because it's telling us where we need to shift or what's not aligned with our soul and our body or our desires and how much we share. But I think the hard part for most people is they get stuck in their emotions and they don't know how to get out of it. So, and you're saying the same thing that we teach, and it's on the sign behind you, that consciousness is everything. So you have to choose what you want your ultimate experience to be. Feel what you're feeling, even if it's negative, but then understand it needs to have an expiration date.
Yeah.
And it's there to show you where you're supposed to go next or what you're supposed to change.
So in human design, the emotional center, the center that creates emotions, is the solar plexus, and it's what we call a motor center. So it creates energy. So when you have that motor center defined in you, right, it's meant to move you into things. So think about like some of the best songs that have ever been written from people being sad or depressed, some of the best poetry, because people have used it to move them in some way, right? And that's, we have a thing that negative expressions mean you're bad and positive expressions mean you're good. But actually, it doesn't have to be that way. And so when we can lean into the negative emotions and realize that they actually can be alchemized into something good, that's when we actually cycle them out of our bodies the quickest as well, because it's energy that wants to move.
Did you ever see the cartoon? It's an animated film, Inside Out.
No.
Oh, I love that I have to watch it with the kids. And it's my they're coming out with a part two now. You should watch it. It's all about how it's this little girl, Riley, and she has sadness and she has joy. And they're all like in the center of her head. And joy, there's anger, there's disgust, and there's one more. And then sadness, you have the houses. Yeah, I said sadness. Mm. I think five. But then you have the house of family, you have the house of fun, you have all these like different. And joy just thinks sadness should not exist. But through this movie, you realize that you need both sadness and joy. It's very much with what you're saying.
Yeah. And I was going to say is, you know, our second oldest boy, Josh, has Down syndrome. Mm-hmm. You've met Josh, I think.
Yeah.
So every once in a while, he says something which is so profound. I don't even know if I shared this with you. Like literally, like we're sitting around having lunch.
And
this
he today?
Like, no, this was like last week. And I wrote it down. I was like waiting for the moment to be able to share it. And it reminded me, apropos of everything you were just saying just now, is that he said, when you trust the process, you finish the process.
Oh, I read that on a paper.
I know, I wrote it down.
And I was like, my God, no, you understand. I read this yesterday on your desk, and I was like, wow, so profound. Why didn't I think of it?
It's Josh. It's Josh's words of wisdom.
Josh, I didn't. I was like, this is so good. I'm going to use this.
There you can. There.
Wow.
Say it again. No, I read it on the paper, and I was like, this is so profound.
It was like
profound.
Out of the blue. Like literally, when you trust the process, you finish the process. Yeah.
That's amazing.
And I'll share that. This is off topic, but
blows us away like quite
every
often.
Once. But it's like, so we have a friend. It's funny because we were talking about this a little bit before about people who become very successful. And unfortunately, sometimes, oftentimes, the ego gets involved. So we have a friend.
We were talking about this off air earlier. Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Sorry. So our friend, after he was very successful, and Josh meets him. And Josh doesn't really know that he wasn't successful. Now he's very successful. He just, and what did he say?
But our friend asked Josh because he thinks Josh is really special. So he said, Josh, do you have a message for me? You know, like he's very open, like that, a curious kind of person. And Josh looks at him. Go ahead. I want to hear the story.
And he's also a very big guy. He's also a very tall person. Very tall. But so Josh says, you have to make yourself small so people can hug you.
And we knew, and we all knew.
We all know Josh, exactly
talking about his height.
Yeah, he wasn't talking about his height or his
and
size.
Our friend was blown away. Like he heard the message that like, wow, my ego's big. Nobody can meet me.
Yeah.
I think, did you say this on a podcast? Because I'm
we
like, I'm not going to do this
story
before. I listen.
It's one of my favorite.
It's so beautiful though. Yeah. Wow. It's so amazing because I think what I keep coming back to is like, if these things are all just the same truth, but just different aspects of it, you know? And so if it's being delivered by someone who really does it with a service consciousness, you're going to get, you know, no one's saying anything that, you know, that different. But I think that I think the post you made about him a few years ago now, but like moved me to tears, and the number of people I sent that to, I think you should pin it to the top of your profile because
yeah, that's a good idea.
A life-changing post.
Wow.
The post you made about him, the one where he's skipping the rope.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so profound.
Okay.
And so inspiring. And seeing him this weekend, I just was like, wow, like this is, shows you what's possible of, you know.
Well, he doesn't have any kind of limited thinking, certainly not about himself, certainly not for anybody else. He's always asked me, you know, like, when am I going to get my driver's license? I'm ready to learn to drive a car. Where's my wife? Which I'm going to help find for him. But he's like, you know, he's just
unlimited, right?
Yeah, he really is. Like he knows he has Down syndrome only because like he discovered, we never told him that until he discovered it.
We actually share the service. Yeah.
But he often, he'll go like every once in a while, it will come up, he'll bring it up. And all of our family was together in a room and he's like, you know, Miriam, do you have Down syndrome? And
just like, no. Sister.
And then to his brother, David, do you have Down syndrome? He's like, no. Abigail, do you? And then to all of us. And he's like, well, I don't want it. Like, why am I the only one who has it? But not because it was any, he's just like, he's always trying to make sense of himself and his place in the world and just in a really beautiful kind of way.
And I wonder what kind, it's interesting. I wonder what kind, what is, what
I want to, let's do that too. He's an Aries, but I'm super curious.
Yeah, it would be really interesting to look him up. It comes down to like genetic expression. So all the different, you'll see when there's like lines and colors and shapes inside, all the stuff inside your chart. It's just what genes are activated and what isn't. And so there's always ways that you can, you know, express them differently and the reasons why they're there and, you know, everyone is, you know, well, it's like your book, like everyone knows that they're different, but actually because our old structures of survival were built on agreeing on everything and being same and similar, because if you were opposite, then you were from the enemy tribe next door. So you had to homogenize.
Or you couldn't survive on your own. You need to be with the group, right? So exactly. It's based on old software.
But now we're in a position where we, as humanity, have to learn like, oh, actually we can be different and not have any of this. That means I'm wrong. That means you're wrong. That means you're better. That means I'm better, and still get on without having to be the same. And that's really, I believe that's the reason why human design came in when it came in, because it's for the time that people need to understand that premise. Whereas before it probably wasn't a priority for us as a collective. And you have three different levels of energy that we operate in, which are individual, tribal, and collective. Mm-hmm. And they're always sort of shifting depending on eras. And we're going from right now in 2027, we're changing from a collective time to an individual time. And we're already seeing the positives and the negatives of that, right? So a lot of collective structures that weren't serving us are crumbling. Also, there's more emphasis on the individual, but we're also not doing it always the right way. So the founder always used to also say that it's coming in to help us with this transitional time of going from collective focus to individual focus, because that can obviously be also very dangerous.
Right.
So.
And that was mapped out from before, or just becoming aware?
Yeah.
Interesting. So is it clear how long that lasts and what comes next?
Yeah. So after the individual will be another tribal. And that's going to be, well, not for another 400 years.
Okay.
Yeah. But this one has been around since 1615. So think about like the last 400 years was about like organizing, you know, getting governments in place and getting the UN and really getting systems and railway trains and, you know, all that stuff is the Industrial Revolution. Like that's all when it started to happen. Mm. So that there was positives. And the important thing is also not to throw the baby out with the bathwater. Like we built good stuff, but we can't just like throw away traditions and all these things now. And that's also what we run in the risk of forgetting at the cost of too much emphasis on the individual. So there's your individual design, but then there's also, you know, like the same in astrology, like the cycles that we're all moving through together.
And like you said, I think it's true, right? The fact that it can be taken very negatively or positively or somewhere in between, depending on humanity.
Exactly. And they're because our brains are changing, we've had so much focus on being strategic and focused and disciplined and sort of very consistent. And now we're moving into a time where those opposite qualities are going to become also quite beneficial. But again, there are certain people who are still built to be totally consistent, totally on it, totally, you know, the same every single day, almost like robotic, right? And we don't want to lose those people. We don't want to damn those people. We don't want to say they're out or they're canceled or they're whatever. Like, we need to take them along and also now leave room for the people who aren't so, you know, living with a strategy or don't have to have a morning routine every day or whatever it is. So it's not just always about having one or the other. And I think that's where we're trying to create the cohesion. Yeah.
Amazing.
I was going to add one more question. What's your personal spiritual, like in a week, in a month, what do you do for your spiritual connection?
Or practice.
Yeah. I love this question. So the main thing that I do is I use every single situation as an opportunity for me to get my ego out of the way. I would say that's the thing I think about more. Like I'm very inconsistent with, you know, meditating. I don't do a daily prayer. I pray all day, like, you know, just kind of casually all day, you know, that kind of stuff. And I'm always talking to my higher power. But the one thing I do consistently, like I know with work, like the more I cannot abuse my business for being about me, being about getting validation, you know, trying to stop my, you know, like I was saying to you before we got on air, it's like, it's nothing new that I didn't learn 15 years ago, but it's just about how many times you practice it. So for me, it's really like, I swear, practice formula will change your life, you know, and still does. And really spotting my ego and really saying like, okay, if it's all here for me, like what is it making me overcome inside me? And then it just is a fun game. So I think those would be the two main things. And then like, never thinking that, you know, your stuff, your themes of your stuff are always going to be the themes of your stuff. So I'm always like, okay, just because I've like ticked this box, I'll see you again in 2 days' time. So I'm just like, I think you become more aware of what your weak spots are. And then just to never kid myself that I'm like done, you know? So I'm always looking through that filter of, okay, is it coming through? Are your, you know, my three things that are my recurring stuff, I like stalk them in my, you know, my day to day, like where is it coming in that I'm not seeing it? And you know, becomes kind of like an outwitting, like almost like a snakes and ladders game. I think that's my main thing. And then just being really nice to myself. I think one of the main things about having your heart broken or your plans changed is that when you're, it's a softening too, you know? And so it's,
humility, like, makes you,
it softens you towards yourself, like just your heart breaks, but then it's also open. So I've
that's
really,
not always automatic though. I think that was,
do
work
you not
you
think
did. I think people can become bitter and scared, and I think other times it can, you're so vulnerable and you're so raw, and you also experienced a great love, so you know it exists and it's possible, and so it's really what you decide to do with it. I think that's a compliment to you, that you,
thank you,
you decided to have it open you rather than close you.
Thank you. It's something I try. So I would say that's my other spiritual practice, is like always just reopen it. Whenever life wants to close it, just flex every day, like reopen it, soften. I often write soften on my hand. Like,
yeah,
soften,
that's
soften,
what I'm saying. Soften. That's the consciousness work for sure.
Yeah, that's an important one.
I love that.
Yeah. What are your guys? I mean,
there's similarities. I think that it's every day something, body, mind, spirit. Mm. So first thing when I wake up, I open my eyes, I put my hand on my chest, I say a prayer and take a deep breath, have appreciation for being able to open my eyes and take breath. And then I say some more prayers throughout the day, but in the morning specifically, exercise, sweat, study. And also every day, I think a big thing that I practice for decades now is giving myself emotional feedback. Like, how is this day for you? Did you do what you think you came to this world to do? Mm. Was it spent in that way? What could you have done differently? What do you want to do tomorrow?
Mm.
So I'm constantly, like, I'm never on repeat or autopilot, I'd say, is a big one for me.
That's powerful.
And I look to do something, hopefully more than one thing, but to offer kindness in a day to not just the people I love, but to those I don't really know.
Mm.
Yeah, so I'd say for me, I would put two categories, one for my own inspiration. So I start every morning with prayers. And for me, I often think about it because it's really the awareness that there's so much more. Whatever I am, the power outside of me is so much greater than that I can connect myself to. Mm. So there's that. And then the study for me, you know, sort of studying, you know, work from thousands of years ago, from hundreds of years ago, that really drives my inspiration.
Mm.
And then to make sure that for me, that it's outward, that there's something I'm doing for others.
Mm.
You know, whether it's for one person or for a group of people, whether it's a lecture I give, that's what keeps driving me. Those two, feeding my own soul and then making sure that on a daily basis, there's something that I'm doing that goes out.
Yeah.
That goes out.
It's funny that you reminded me. So I don't know. I mean, I thought this was a spiritual thing today that happened before I came here. I promised, because we kind of did this last minute because we're leaving town tomorrow. And I was so excited to see you here in LA. We don't live here either. But I promised my youngest that I would take her out today, just a mommy daughter day. So we went to Santa Monica Pier, and I already know I cannot tolerate, like, swinging rides or, like, I get motion sickness very easily.
Mm.
But it was just the two of us. So I didn't want her to ride any of the rides alone. She's like, I want to go on every ride. I'm like, great. And I'm thinking, oh my God, I'm going to throw up. Like, I can't do every, but I didn't say anything to her. So the second ride we go on is like this swing across. I started to break out in a sweat, dripping, right? And contracting my stomach so that I get less nauseated, and I'm smiling the whole way, and I'm like, oh my God, I hope I'll throw up. And then after, I had to tell her, because I could not do every ride. So, like, she went on one or two, but she was just, I think the fact that, like, I was going to sacrifice that for her, she didn't care if she rode alone or not, you know. I'm going to throw up on her.
Aww.
But I think, like, even that can be a spiritual pursuit. And then I put on a lot of blush. I changed when I came here because I was, like, green before I got here, but
That's also what, you know, I think that's one of the, I mean, there's so many things about Kabbalah I could go on and on, but overcoming yourself and your own, and that's
desires.
When, you know, helping other people and stuff, always, like, whenever I'm having a down day, doesn't that just change everything? And finish off being like, everything's great with the world again.
This is the best day ever.
I was going to say, my mother, I think my mother passed away a few years ago, but she, that was one of her favorite and famous quotes. If you're having challenges, difficulty, having a bad day, go and do something for somebody else, and you'll see how that opens things up for you.
It really does. Yeah. It's like the most simple mechanism
magic
in the world. I know, and it just doesn't ever not work.
So tell our listeners where they can find you, follow you, if there's anything that you're working on next or.
So I used to do readings one-on-one all the time. In lockdown, I turned it into an app. So the idea is that I don't like it when I don't personally love the how expensive it is to get a lot of spiritual tools and how long people have to wait and, you know, this kind of thing. So I was like, wouldn't it be cool if for the price of a latte a month, you could get all this information, you could do all your friends, get daily tips. So that's what I did in lockdown. And it's just called My Human Design. It's on the App Store, on Android, everything. You can also do it on my website. I also teach people how to read charts on my website as well. That's My Human Design. And then Instagram, it's just My Human Design or my personal one, which is Jenna Zoe.
Amazing.
So easy to find.
That's been great talking to you. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. This is really fun. So fun.
Stay spiritually hungry.